Wow. Welcome. My name is Chris Kramer. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. I don't have a clue what he just said. I don't know. Here's Chris Kramer. He's an asshole. Okay, there you go. I'll try to live up to the hype. I am so honored to be here. This is gonna be fun. I get a chance to share a little tonight, and tomorrow Samantha and Larry and I'll do a little quick run through the steps, and we'll get a chance to hear from them this week, and I'm looking forward to that. Y'all are pretty amazing folks. I mean, I'm speaking at the home of XA speakers and probably the prettiest gene pool on earth. True. There's some exceptions in here. There's some, by God, ugly folks in here. But as a general, for the most part, I don't know. For the most part, women especially. What the hell? What can I say? We were asking today earlier who I was here in 2003 with my brother and stuff, and I couldn't remember what year it was. It's just it all kind of blurs together. But we've been buds, and I'm so honored to get a chance to come back and try to do this again. And it's still cold here. What can I say? What a great place. Nothing's much changed. I want to tell you a little bit where I'm at currently with the steps and with this thing called recovery. I want to kind of slide into this. I have the I come from a particular perspective, and that's all I can do. I'm up here to share my story, my story may be different than your story. Okay, I'm gonna get some of this out of the way. But it's my story, and you can't really argue with that, you know. And so, if I stay honest and true to this, I'm going to explain to you kind of what happened, and you can see where I kind of come from. I was years in Alcoholics Anonymous, dying in the rooms in the fellowship, and I couldn't get sober. I couldn't pick up a 30-day chip. I don't know how to tell you. I couldn't not drink. I could not drink for periods of time, but I'd have to do some of those outside issue things. And so I'd quit the drugging and I'd go back to the drinking. I mean, I have to have something in me that changes the way I feel. I finally got sober in 1987. So I'm a little better than 22 years sober. I work for a hospital. I work for a treatment center in Texas, down near Ingram, Texas, where I grew up. It is absolutely country. I grew up on a street called Goat Creek Road. Like I said, y'all come visit. I don't know why in the hell you'd want to, but y'all come visit. And you'd be on Goat Creek Road. Oh, my gosh. But I work for this hospital and have for about 17 years. I do clerical work for this hospital. So I get to see thousands of alcoholics and addicts come through this hospital, okay? And from my little vantage point, I get to watch a lot of people come in and a lot of people leave. And I get to know who gets sober and who stays and who leaves. And you know, the truth is that, guys, that the solution to our problem is this, is the fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But we have such a bad PR out there in the real world. There's so many people that have come to meetings and not been able to stay sober that they just want to take shots at us. You'll follow? And so I'm up here to share maybe some of the reasons why they're taking shots. And you're free to agree or disagree with anything I say. If I say something tonight that offends you, that you don't agree with, then you know, you just go away. I don't know what to tell you. I used to say, come up and talk to me about it. And it's like, but you would, you know, and it's like, I don't want to argue with you. You know, I'll say this and move on. You know, if just going to meetings and talking about your tragic day is keeping you sober, who am I to argue with that? Have a nice life. I don't want to hang around you, but have a nice life. I just finally in 1987, because of some good sponsorship, learned a different way to stay sober. And that's all I want to talk to you guys about. So you'll stick around. And like I said, this week, tomorrow we'll take a fast run through the steps, and we'll have a good time with that. And you guys can, man, we can visit. Y'all understand my English a lot more than I understand your language. So y'all come find us. And allow me to make amends to you if I've stepped on you, because I'm just here to share my story. So we'll move on. It's amazing to me. I used to, my sponsor was Mark Houston. He just, he had passed away a few weeks ago, and he was my sponsor for about 17 years, and some of y'all have heard his tapes and CDs and back in the day, and you know, I used to travel around with him sometimes. I'd carry his book and drive him around, you know, when he'd go speak someplace, and he was carrying the steps. He was coming right straight out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, but yet he was the controversial speaker, because he was talking about God and the 12 steps, and, you know, and it was amazing to me when I got to sit with him in these workshops to see how many people just seemed to want to come to find some fault. You know, you follow, just to we get people just waiting in by the thousands, just waiting for an opportunity to be pissed off, you know. And it's like, I can't believe he said that, you know. I don't know what to tell you. We're all coming out of the Big Book. I mean, if you're not, you're the controversial one, as far as I'm concerned, not me. We're just little Big Book thumpers. That's all of us. That's all we do. So anyway, I'm absolutely honored. There's a great website out there called stepstudy.org, and there's an article that was written on that step study, and I've got some little sheets tomorrow I'll give you, and you can go check it out. But there's an article called Three Views, and I'm not going to go through the whole article. I wish I could. I wish I'd wrote the damn thing, because it is a good article, but it explains on paper what I've tried to verbalize from the podium for years. And there's so many different ways for people to get sober. And Bill Wilson, when he wrote the book in 1939, understood that. He goes out of his way to talk about different kinds of drinkers. He talks about moderate drinkers. Y'all know those people? We don't really hang around those two people too much. They're loser to the core. We don't hang around those people. If you can moderate, I mean, what the hell? Why do you want to be with us? We don't do anything in moderation, for heaven's sakes. But Bill Wilson talks about the moderate drinker and then the hard drinker. And this guy's a little knucklehead. You know, he drinks too much. He takes too much dope, whatever. But given sufficient reason, this cat can quit. You follow? But then it says in the next paragraph on page 21 in our rendition of this thing, it says, but what about the real alcoholic? You see, and I introduce myself from the podiums as a real alcoholic, because I'm the textbook diagnosed alcoholic. And people get offended. Well, you know, I'm an AA if I say I'm an AA. You know, it's like, I didn't say you weren't. Welcome, loser. I don't know what to tell you. You're arguing your right to be in a group full of the sickest people on earth? Man, come on. We move to the front. We need you. You're welcome, but Bill Wilson spends 60 pages in the book trying to explain what a real alcoholic and a real drug addict looks like. And here's the grinder, because if you hear this, what will work for the moderate drinker or the hard drinker might not work for the real alcoholic. And Bill Wilson knew that. He understood that. That article I was talking about talks about different views of recovery. And there's this idea that we can re-socialize. And a lot of people talk about it in meetings, you know, with us, like, meeting makers make it. That's where that crap came from. You know, we have entire fellowships out there that all they do is push the fellowship. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking about drinking. Well, double up on your meetings. It's like, what? Why? I'm not knocking meetings, but I mean, show me in the book where it says if you're thinking about taking a drink, go to more meetings. But some people can stay sober that way. You make sense? They talk about the psychological approach to this. Many of us in this room have had psychological problems. I can tell by looking at some of your faces, you're having one right now. And but I mean, who amongst us, I mean, most of us have had some trauma that we could benefit from. But there are certain people that will just work through a certain issue, quote unquote, you with us, and come out the other side and not want to drink anymore. Make sense? We see it all the time. Somebody loses a loved one and they grief and they drink too much. And all of a sudden they work through the grief. They come back out. They don't have to drink too much, or they can moderate it. You with us? But these are the same. These are the beautiful children of God that are... that are sitting in meetings telling you that the solution to your problem is therapy. I'm not knocking therapy. It'll help. So we'll exercise. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. And then what the Bill Wilson talks about in the article, what Bill Wilson was trying to get across in the 164 pages is this idea of a conversion method, which is all about a thing called a spiritual experience. And I got to tell you guys, I mean, there's so many people in our fellowships. We get to speak all around the world, guys. And there's so many people that want to pick, just, they get lockjawed around that. Well, you can stay sober without the spiritual experience. No, you can't. If you're the real alcoholic, the book says you can't. Y'all understand? It's not the little thumpers that are killing our fellowship. It's the middle of the road bastards out there who don't have to do anything but go to meetings to stay sober. And they're the ones who feel compelled very vocally to share their opinions with everybody. You follow? And this is the confusion. I spent years in and out, 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd walk into the door, you know, and there'd be some people, they'd be carrying some book or something like that, and there'd be some nice little guy over here, and he said, "Now listen, now, you see that thing over there? That's a big book. Don't worry about that. You know, you just need to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and downstream some time, you can work the steps." You with me? I've just shot a bunch of dope, and I'm drinking in the truck, you know, and I'm coming in, I'm trying to figure out how to not do that, you know, and this guy who seemed to be very well-meaning told me that what I needed to do was sit and come to a bunch of meetings, so well, I'm going to get a sleeping bag and move into this fucking club, and I'm going to drink your coffee until I acidify myself and date your women, and then about 2 weeks in... No, the prettiest women on earth come to AA. I'm going to tell you that's for a fact. But I'm going to sit in these meetings. My MO is about 2 weeks. You with us? And I can stay sober on a drop of a dime. You can hear me, but the breaks, you know? Good looking woman like that. "Chris, your drinking is upsetting me." Honey, I was fixing to stop anyway. I mean, this must be a God thing, you know, because I'm done. You know, I'm so done. And I can dump that stuff out in a heartbeat. So can you. Especially when this disease is early on. This is genetic in nature, guys, and it's progressive. We all don't come in here in the same spot in that progression. Early on, I could quit for weeks, no problem. I just couldn't stay quit. That's the pisser. Just don't drink and go to meetings and everything will be okay. I got the meeting part down. It's the not drinking that I have a little problem with. But I don't have a problem for a couple of weeks. You follow? The pain of that last... debacle, laying out in the backyard, puking straight up. I can cover my, you know, I just push myself back into a meeting and reestablish some old friendships, and I do everything okay for a few weeks. And then internally what takes place is, again, nobody wants to seem to talk about it, is untreated alcoholism begins to return. Big Book describes it as being irritable, restless, and discontent, fearful, depressed, bored. Y'all with us? Judgmental. Pick me. No sense of direction. How about that one? There's a great one in there. It says, have a feeling of uselessness. This low self-esteem stuff. Guys, ask me when I'm drinking. Doing some dope or whatever. Ask me when I'm drinking. "Chris, are you irritable, restless, and discontent?" No. No. Having trouble in personal relationships? Absolutely not. In fact, I'm fixing to help you with yours right now. Sit down. If you got some time, we'll talk. Oh, my gosh. But you take me away. There's away from the booze. You with me? For a few weeks, this internal stuff starts to come back. And I start to come undone. And I can't verbalize it. Guys, I'm in my early 30s, and I'm trying these experiments in sobriety, and I can't verbalize, "Oh my gosh, I'm 2 weeks sober, and the spiritual maladies come back and kicking my ass. I just don't know what to..." I'm just all of a sudden find myself internally very uncomfortable, and I get blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit, and my little head says, with me, 9 times out of 10, you could probably smoke a joint. Driving down the road, look around, what? Wait, who said that? it's just pot. What are you, a pussy? And then I smoke pot. You with me? Don't like pot. Never like pot. Y'all understand? If you have it and I don't have anything else, I'll smoke your damn pot. But I'm not going to go buy it. It's a, for some of you, I know some of y'all love that drug, but it's just a horrible drug for me. And so y'all heard me talk about horny and paranoid are not comfortable things to... They don't, that's why they talk about the drug of choice. I can drink a case of beer and go to work. I'll smoke a roach in a car like that and just sit there for an hour just rubbing my, you know. I can't talk and I'd like to go talk to her, but I'm not gonna because I'm scared to death. And I just, it's not a fun, but what happens is when I smoke pot, the craving, the same area of the brain that's affected by the alcohol, the craving kicks in and I'm off to the stupid races. You with me? I don't like the way this makes me feel. And 3 hours later, 6 hours later, I walk across the street, go to the store, buy a quart of beer, and I'm off to the races one more time. What got me drunk? Okay, everybody says, well, the pot got you drunk. I understand that. But what got me drunk was the discomfort inside that caused me to want to go do it to begin with. This is what drives me crazy, because people talk about going to meetings fixing the problem. And I got to tell you real quick, guys, going to meetings does not treat alcoholism. Probably the most controversial thing I say from the podium since I stopped saying the F word. I'm going to tell you, going to meetings won't treat alcoholism. It'll help in the process. It's a part of our three legacies. It's stuff we have to do, but that's not what fixes us. Everybody believes, the world out there, especially in the treatment center industry, believes that if we can just not drink one stupid day at a time, you with us? That we'll be able to get to a spot where we can think through the drink and not ever touch it again. And yet, Bill Wilson on page 24, we're going to talk about it first thing in the morning, clearly states you're not going to be able to remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. Y'all know what? I'll translate that for you in English. That means you're not going to remember your own stupid war stories, much less mine. Fear won't keep you sober. It might get you sober. It might motivate you to go to treatment and make some changes in your life, but it won't keep you sober because you can't bring to the forefront of your mind the fact that you're in trouble. Make sense? Guys, that's why we die. And I got to tell you, folks, it would be nothing that I would like better to ever get up from a podium or in a workshop and never say anything that would go against anybody's. But I feel a duty to the real alcoholic that's dying out there, the real little dope fiend that's dying out there. And this is the only hope he's going to get, but I'm going to walk around on little eggshells because I don't want to take a chance on offending somebody. Wow. Wow. When did it become okay not to tell the newcomer how to get well? Because we do it every day. I grew up in a hill country, and my father was a printer. He was an alcoholic himself. He's passed away. Nicest guy you'd ever want to come across. He's just quiet, alcoholic. My twin brother and I caught the bullet. My mother was not an alcoholic. I got two sisters that never had a problem. They still freak us out today. We were laughing the other day. My older sister was having a New Year's Day party. They cooked out, and they had some people, and she handed me some money. She says, here, go to the store and buy some beer for the party. And I'm years sober. It doesn't bother me. I guess no problem. She gave me a $20 bill, which I don't know the translation. This is not much damn money. You know, follow? And I says, how many people are coming to this party? She says, oh, 60 or 70. And I got a $20 bill. How much do you want? You know, Yavala? And I bought a 12-pack, and they had three beers left over. You know, and I was like, y'all, this is like a whole new world for me. I mean, I don't know. My little sister, I've been out drinking with her 1,000 times. She'd say the same thing back in the day when she'd drink some socially. She said, we'd go have a couple of drinks. She says, it's time to go back to work. And I said, Lisa, you want another drink real quick? One more before we go back. She said, no, I'm starting to feel it. And I'm scratching my head. What are you talking about here? What does that have to do with anything? I'm feeling it too. Let's drink another one. But she doesn't develop the phenomenal craving. She has a couple. She gets to a certain spot. She stops. You'll follow. We're raised in the same family. Same issues. All the same stuff. You're down with us? No goofy stuff going on. And yet my twin brother and I caught the genetic bullet. It's no more complicated than that. I'm so sick and tired of the world pointing fingers at somebody else out there, blaming them for their alcoholism. Did they exacerbate it? Did they make it worse? Did they complicate our lives? Absolutely. Should we shoot them? Probably. But let's come off this idea that my drinking is connected to them. Because I guarantee you, that'll put you in a little cul-de-sac that you can't get out of. That's just what happened to me. I was in the food business for years. I was a professional chef, and I was pretty good, talented, and got accepted into a great apprenticeship program in Houston and working with a bunch of Europeans, and it was pretty successful. They drank, I drank. It was a match made in heaven. You follow? And when it was working, there was no problem. But, you know, if you drink enough, you do enough dope, sooner or later the stuff stops working. That's the problem. I got to tell you this. It's a news flash. If alcohol and drugs still worked for you people, this room would be empty. And the sad part is, for some of you, it's still working. That's why you're having a difficult time with this. You don't think it's going to stop working. And trust me, it will. The big book says it. Bop to you drop. But I'm saying, oh, my gosh. You drink long enough, and it'll get to be a real pain in the butt. And Bill Wilson talks about it. You can't imagine life living with it, and you can't imagine life living without it. Y'all make sense? I'm visualizing a house in the hill country over near where I work, and there's a housewife that's there. I've met her before. I did a 12-step call on her before. She's a nice little housewife who drinks vodka. She used to drink socially in the clubs around town. She was the nicest lady in the world. You with me? I can guarantee you this morning at 7 o'clock, she had a cup of coffee with some vodka poured in it while she took care of her kids. She's not partying. She's trying to be the best mother she can be. She's just gotten to a spot where she needs to drink to do it. This is what the world out there doesn't understand. We don't have a choice whether we're going to drink. I'm going to drink, or I'm going to come unglued at the seams. That's the truth. So I was pretty successful in that business, but I'm uncomfortable inside. I'm coming apart, and I start seeing doctors in the late 70s, early 80s for every disorder known to man. You know, it's great with a therapist in the United States. I don't know if they do it here, but everybody's got to come up with a new diagnosis, you know. Chris, you're not an alcoholic. You're manic depressive. Rock on. What did that get me? Well, we have these medications. Chris, you know, you're not manic depressive. You're borderline. Well, what is that going to get me? You have an anxiety disorder. Heck, that ought to be good for something. And then, you know, and before you know it, I'm taking handfuls of pills. You follow? All of these pills, not all of them, but many of these pills will also trigger the craving and lead me back. And so that's one of the reasons that I couldn't stay sober. The doctors should have known better and didn't. All of those symptoms of everything I just talked about, clinical depression, anxiety, all of those symptoms look surprisingly like untreated alcoholism. And yet our first line of defense is always a pill. I'm not knocking that, folks. I'm not knocking medication. I am not a doctor. Don't hear me say that. I'm just saying, for me, I was sorely misdiagnosed. I'm just a garden variety drunk who can't get well. And the symptoms are kicking my butt. So the doctors are giving me the pills, and I tried to get married to save my life. Any of you guys ever get married thinking that'll help? And then I got a divorce thinking that would help. And I moved to the country thinking that would help, and I moved back to the city thinking that'll help. And, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm trying to change all of my external. Henry, we were just talking about little issue, man, these little pins we carry. I'm going to try to change all my external stuff so I can be happy inside, you know, and I've seen it 1,000 times. And the truth is, buddy, you're going to be happy wherever you are. I nearly died finding that out. Anyway. I'm in AA, early 80s, trying to stay sober, and the people are killing me. They're with their stories. They're so afraid they're going to hurt my feelings. I need to say this from the podium. I don't think anybody out there ever tried to hurt me. Y'all understand that? The guy that told me just go to meetings and don't worry about those 12 steps, he wasn't trying to hurt me. He just didn't know any better. You with me? And inadvertently, he was hurting me because I was the real McCoy that needed the full potent medication. Some of y'all have heard me talk about it. It's like if a pharmaceutical company came out with a pill for ugly, we could use it here, I can tell you. But the pharmaceutical companies couldn't make any money on the pill for ugly because there's just not that many ugly people. You with me? There's a million homely people, but there's just not that many ugly people. So what do? We tamper with the way it's made, water it down. You with us? So that it'll work for homely people too. But the pill was made for uglies, and now it won't work for the ugly people. Does that make sense? They're saying, we're not, every head in the place is going like this. Where is he going with that? This is what we did with AA. AA works 100% of the time. If you're an alcoholic and an addict and you don't want to drink and drug anymore, you can work the 12 steps, and I guarantee you, you will have a spiritual experience and your life will change. But we're so goddamn afraid of telling the newcomer that information. You follow? We're so afraid that we're going to scare them out of the rooms by telling them the truth. One of the biggest reasons we do that is that we have this idea that if you'll just sit here long enough, you'll pick it up by osmosis. But what happens when Chris Raymer sits here long enough? I get up in my little selfish and self-centered head and start coming up with a reason that I need to go out of here and drink. You with me? Sooner or later, you're going to say something that will offend me, and I'll use that as an excuse to go out and get loaded. This is a race, folks. If you're one of us, there's a sense of urgency to finish this work. How many people do we know out there, guys, that have been sober long periods of time? I've talked to some that I met in my first trip to Iceland that are struggling with sobriety now. Why? Because they simply stopped doing the work. They stopped doing the thing that got them sober to begin with. It's so easy to get complacent. It's a piece of cake. That's the noose around our neck. God says in the third step prayer that he's going to remove our difficulties so victory over those difficulties can bear witness. And what happens when God starts to remove our difficulties? What do? Instead of going back into a meeting and pulling somebody with a vision of how cool life's going to be, you follow? We just stop going to meetings. Why do I need to go to meetings? I haven't got a brand new car out there, got a nice house out on the lake, and everything's copo. Oh, my gosh. And then 2 months later, they're back in treatment. What the hell happened? Make sense? Untreated alcoholism. I was 7 years in and out of AA, can't get sober. I don't own a big book, and I don't have a sponsor. You follow? Whose fault is that? Mine. Did anybody tell me to get a sponsor and get a big book? Not one in 7 years. Where I got sober, we didn't do big book stuff. We did open discussion meeting hell. You with us? Who's got the topic? Ooh, shit, pick me. I got the topic. Oh, what is it? I'm having trouble with my wife. Let's talk about relationships. Oh, that's great. Chris is back there in the back trying to detox in our rooms right here. We'd like to hear some hope about how to have a spiritual experience and never drink again. But I think we can spare like 1 hour just to talk about your relationship. We all have so much experience with that. God, there's probably not two successful relationships in the whole goddamn room, but we can't stop talking about it. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, I can't get sober. And 1987, I'm working for my twin brother up in North Texas, and I've got a little efficiency apartment that my sister-in-law co-signed for me, and which means I don't have any money or any credit. You with us? I'm 35 years old, and I've got about 30 pounds on me right up here in the front, and I'm kidney damage and liver damage, and I'm dying. I've been to treatment. I've been to the church. I've been to AA. I've done 10 years of therapy. I'm taking a handful of pills a day trying to stay. Y'all follow? Guys, I'm taking so many medications, I pee green. It's like, And I'm not staying sober on top of all that. So I'm taking a chance with my life every day, and I even did colonics trying to stay sober. That's a big deal out in California too. You know, you want to stay sober, you got to purify your system. Y'all know what colonics is? Oh my, Arner will tell you later. I don't know. It has to do with purifying your system and your butt. I'm not going to go there. But I got to tell you, guys, but I mean, you got to really want to stay sober. They say, well, Chris, every time I'd relapse and come back in, and says, you say, well, Chris, he just didn't want it bad enough. And that's what we do with the newcomer. We don't tell them how to get well, but we watch them relapse and then blame them. Buddy, come on. I mean, do you remember how much courage it took to screw up your courage to come in the first time and maybe pick up a little desire chip or something and ask for some help? I mean, it was everything we could muster to do that. Don't throw that back in my face and say that I didn't want to do it. Of course we wanted to do it. You didn't tell me how to get well. You were as kind as could be, But the old expression goes like this. At what point does love and tolerance become apathy? I'm just going to let him have his own experience. Just let him have his own experience. I can just see some of you mothers out there with your little babies about the first time that they pull themselves out of that stroller and start running towards the street. We're just going to let him have his own experience. No, you're not. You're going to grab the little guy by the neck and jerk him back as fast as possible. And you're not going to care if he's crying or pissed about it. You're going to save his little life. That's what we do in AA. We don't sit there and watch somebody jump off a cliff. Give them the tools. If they want to go ahead and jump after that, then our hands are clean. But at least give them the tools. Anyway, 87, it's a cold November night, a lot like tonight. And it's not this cold, but it's cold. It's cold for Texas. And I walk in the back door of my little apartment. I got a little deal in there, and I got some return checks. And I open those return checks, and you know, here it is. I'm 35 years old, and I'm broke again. Any of y'all ever been there? You know, I try to explain to people, you know, family members, they just think, well, sooner or later, you're going to get tired of letting people down. You're right. And our solution to that is we off ourselves or just give up. And that's what I did in 1987. It was a Thursday night, and I got up from the floor and fed the ferrets and watered a little ivy that was half dead over there. I'll never forget. And I went to the medicine cabinet and took a couple of bottles of pills and tried to commit suicide. Guys, I got a wonderful home, and I'm raised in a religion, although I'm quite fallen away. I was raised in a religion where that's not appropriate. It's not acceptable. And I'm so done with this thing called life. It's not even funny. I've told you I'm going to stop 1,000 times. My daddy, he raised a good kid, an honorable man, truly, great work ethics. But I've become something that I can't even... And I took those pills and I swallowed them down, and about the time they hit my stomach, I'm looking at myself in the medicine cabinet mirror, and I heard this voice that said, don't do this, go back to AA. I've gotten emails from people all over the world who have heard the same voice. I don't know. It wasn't a thought. You should go back to AA. This was a voice, the same voice. I heard it 3 times that night. Don't do this, go back to AA. Of course, I'm arguing with the voice. I'm kicking the ferret cage to make sure that, are you talking to me? It's that loud in my head, and it freaks me out. And I because I don't want to go back to AA. You could have said, shave your head, move to Africa, become a missionary. Got it. Done. Let's go. I'd start selling stuff tomorrow. I had no big deal. I'm willing to go to any length. I just don't know what that looks like. And go back to AA. And I made myself sick that night. And I laid down on the side of the bed and conked out. And the next morning, I heard that voice one last time. And I got up and went to a doctor that morning and went to work. And at 6 o'clock, I went to a meeting I'd never been to before. We're going to talk about this tomorrow in our little workshops. This guy had 12-stepped me 3 years earlier. He had taken me to a meeting. I'd come out of a blackout. And I was scared to death. And I called this guy because I knew he was in that A&A thing. And he came and picked me up and he said, let's go to this meeting. And I said, no, I just can't. He said, just for future reference, if you ever decide to go back to a meeting, go to this one. Because this is a nest of big book thumpers. I don't know if that translates with you guys, but that means that everybody's carrying big books and they're all working the steps. And I made a mental note as I'm nodding my head, I'll never go in that room ever. You know, it's a bunch of zealots, religious zealots. That's the last thing I want to do. But I'm coming unglued, guys, and it's 6 o'clock and I'm running late, and I know I'm detoxing. And I got a few hours in me before this starts to get nasty. And so I go to this meeting, and I got out of my old pickup truck, and I walked in the back door of this AA group up in North Texas. And sure enough, I walked in, and first thing I noticed that everybody had a big book in front of their lap. You know, with us? That was back in the day we could smoke. Everybody had 6 cigarettes in their mouth smoking. We screwed it up in the United States. And we don't smoke in any meetings anymore because we messed it up. We could have smoked 1 cigarette and been okay, you know, but we had to light 6 all at once. Like this. Shit. And I walked in, and the ceiling's dropping with the smoke, and I'm so self-conscious. I wish I could paint a picture. I just don't have the vocabulary. I am homely as hell on a good day. You with us? I mean, that's just the way it is. My first wife said, you could have a $2,000 Armani suit on and still look like you came out of a dumpster. Stick 17 years of drinking and drugging on top of that, you follow? Because I had been in dumpsters in Houston, Texas. And I'm walking into this place, and I got the old clothes on I've been wearing for days, and a little Fruit of the Loom t-shirt, you know, and all stained up, and walked in, and everybody's laughing, and goddamn, I know they're laughing at me. I instinctively check my zipper, you know. Y'all know how it is when you feel, it's all about me, you know. It's still to this day, 22 years sober, it's all about me. Oh, my God, it's a battle we have to fight. And that was the joke when I got sober, was they say, Chris, we never knew if you were wearing an eye patch or an earmuff. A little. Some of y'all that didn't get that, let me just cut to the chase. You ain't ever gonna get laid that way, you know? Ever. I don't care how much money you got. I got a big full beard like some of you guys, except it don't look as good, and they got food in it, you know, and I'm just, I'm a wreck, and I'm coming apart, and I'm detoxing in this meeting. You with me? And I walk about halfway in, and my head does what it's done 1,000 times. It's time to go. This was a good idea at 3 o'clock, at 8 o'clock this morning, but at 6 o'clock now, it's too much. I'll come back Sunday when I feel better. You follow? And I took one step back, and I stepped on this little girl's foot. And this little young girl, about 19 years old, just like some of you in here, it stuck her finger in my belt loop. She said, sit down, cowboy, and she plopped me down in a chair. And I'm like, and I am not a cowboy. I may wear boots, but I don't know nothing about being a cowboy. And she said, sit down, cowboy, and plop me down in a chair. And I mean, like, listen, guys, I get emails all the time. Well, because it sounds like I'm knocking this, but this little girl wasn't off in some little young adult meeting talking about young adult things. You know, she was in mainstream AA trying to help a damn drunk. And it didn't matter that the attachments weren't the same. Her sponsor couldn't get to me. She was an old lady across the way, and she had pointed to her, and the little girl did exactly what she was supposed to do. She got between me and the door. Stay. She knew I was going to leave. If she hadn't have been there, I'd have died. And they got me a cup of coffee and paper towels to clean up the cup of coffee, and... And they did just like that. Every time I spill it, they'd laugh again. You know, oh, my God. Buddy, you are so messed up. But understand, I'm not drinking, but I'm detoxing hard. And the chairperson saw me, actually took charge of the meeting. I got to say this. Like the chairperson took charge. It wasn't this, well, this is your meeting. Who's got the topic? We got a guy obviously dying in the meeting, but we don't need to talk to him. One of you guys got a problem with your car or something you need to talk about? Maybe probation's not being good. That's AA in North Texas at the time. You follow? This guy didn't do that. He said, oh, shit, we got a ringer in here. Welcome back, Chris. They'd all seen me up in North Texas. 7 years I'd been up there. He said, welcome back. Listen, let's go around and talk about how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps. Wow. I mean, guys, I've been in AA for 7 years. I've never heard that as a topic. You know how that translated means if you haven't worked the 12 steps, you got nothing to share. Shut up. We hear it in our meetings all the time. I know that it happens in Iceland here. The topic's 4-step. The first time a little person just perks up. Well, I haven't done a 4-step, but, you know, this is what I... Shut up. Share your experience. I don't want to know your head knowledge of what you think, what you learned in treatment. Have you done it? Y'all understand that? Golly, guys. I want to hear from your experience, not your knowledge. Experience about the steps, experience about kids, experience about being married, experience about anything in life. If you've done it, I want to hear about it because I can learn from that. I'm so sick and tired of hearing people's fucking opinions. I could puke. Y'all understand that? You just want to hear yourself talk. Well, I've never had any babies, but this is what I think you should do. Every woman in here, yeah, shut up. I feel your pain. No, comma, you don't. Okay. And they went around the room, guys, and they did exactly what they said they'd do. And there's 20, 30 people in that room, and they all went around and they shared miracles as a result of working the steps. Not as a result of going to 90 meetings in 90 days and just not drinking one effing day at a time. They talked about working the 12 steps and getting their jobs back and buying, getting credit cards and being in good relationships and going back to school. And I'm always a huge, the sculpting in this country. Every time I come and see I want to cry just on the street. There's just so much beautiful art in this country. And I'm talentless, but I have an eye for it. I love art. And this lady was down at the deal, and she says, as a result of working the steps, I'm sketching again. I'm drawings. And she had her little sketchbook. You follow? I mean, guys, these guys had me on the edge of the seat. This group, for the first time, was doing what they were supposed to do. What's our job? We're supposed to pull the newcomer with a vision. You with us? We're not supposed to scare them into recovery. We're supposed to pull them with a vision. The guys that I sponsor, you better not come into a meeting with some stupid fucking problem. You come to me with your problem. But in a meeting, if you've got some hope to share with a newcomer, open your mouth. If you don't, shut up. Pretty rigid? But that's where we need to go, guys. Guys, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. The last thing I want to hear is about how you drank. Could care less. Y'all follow? There's a thing called identification. We're going to talk about it this week. I think our stories are so important, it's not even funny. Friday night in Iceland is a perfect time to tell my story to you. Make sense? All the bells and whistles. Tuesday night in an open discussion meeting with some newcomers sitting in there is not the time to tell my story. They are here. We have already caught them. You with us? They're captive. We don't need to scare them. You with us? The identification that Bill Wilson is talking about is the disease in the book. That's what they need to identify with. They don't need to identify with our stories. And that's where you guys get off page with me. All we have is our stories. No. On page 17 in our book, it says that one element of the cement that binds us is our story. But that's not going to hold us together as we're now bound. What? Come on, guys. I'm sitting here in the room watching people that I met 7 years ago in Iceland come back in and hug my neck. 7 years we've been friends, changing emails. Some of you guys I haven't seen in 7 years. It's so wonderful to see you. Is it our story that brought tears to my eyes? It's the fact that we're sober, kicking butt, taking names. What an honor to watch your courage, to know you. End of the meeting, an old geezer came up beside me and said, Chris, I need to ask you one question. Seen you up in North Texas a long time, picking up chips. I need to ask you one question. Because the book asked me to ask you this. Are you done? Follow? The book doesn't ask me to ask you, are you done today? It asked me to ask you, have you made a commitment to try to do this? None of us have the power to do this more than a day. I'm with that. But the book asks us to find out if you're finished. We waste way too much time with alcoholics and addicts running around out there that have never even had to face the fact, are you done or not? Does that make sense? Because if you're done, the book says you're going to be willing to go to any length. And then my job is to show you what that looks like. Hear me again, because some of you are grinding your teeth already. Hear me again. I don't know how to stay sober more than a day at a time. We live life one day at a time. But it starts from a commitment. I say I'm going to stay sober. I say that I'm willing to go to any length. You with me? I'm willing to go to any length until you tell me to do something I don't want to do. You follow? And then I'm going to have second thoughts. Well, it's Wednesday night and that television show's on, you know, but it's, you know, we're supposed to go down to that halfway house and carry the message down there, but maybe I'll go next. You with me? And I start watering it down. I said yes, and the next day they were on my doorstep to make sure I made it back to the meeting, knocking on the door at 9 o'clock. Who the hell does that on a Saturday morning? I'm detoxing, running around looking for my patch. Who in the hell's out there? Alcoholics Anonymous was out there because they knew that if they didn't come get me, I wasn't going to come back. Make sense? They weren't chasing me, but I told them I was interested in doing this. And they grabbed me and they took me back up to a meeting, and we got to a 10 o'clock AA meeting, and it was good, if I remember. And we got in a back room afterwards, and we started talking about God for about 2 minutes, and we did a third step prayer. Ready? I didn't have a problem with God. Why are we going to? I want you to read these chapters for 6 months, and then we're going to talk about it. And I want you to make a list of what you want God to be like. Guys, I already said I don't have a problem with God. I'm eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. I know there's a God protecting me. I know I'm okay. Don't have a problem. Move on. Did a third step prayer. We went to lunch. Came back. They gave me a notebook. I said, let's start working on that old fourth step. I said, well, it's a little fast, don't you think? You know what he said? Chris, you've been in AA for 7 years. Point taken. What do I do to start this? And here I am. I've been in AA for 7 years and I don't know how to do it. He said, Chris, but we'll talk about it at 6 o'clock. Just go home and start making a list of the people you hate. Yeah, your name's on it right here, buddy. But what this old guy did was give me an adequate presentation of the program. He showed me what this was going to look like, and I started to do the work, and the miracle took place. 2 weeks later, guys, these guys have got me active. Again, tomorrow we're going to talk about 12-step stuff. He had me active in the fellowship. Y'all know what that looks like? Same stuff. People over here making coffee, setting up chairs, being of service. See, I come from the AA environment where you can't do anything until you're sober a period of time. Of course, Bill Wilson didn't talk about that. Dr. Bob, all of these guys worked the steps in 30 days. But we're going to take a year to do it. We're going to be very thorough. No, we're not. We're just going to wait till I get uncomfortable enough in my skin to go back out and drink again. Then you're going to blame me for that, and we're going to move on. Make sense? Guys, it's cause and effect. You're uncomfortable inside. You work the 12 steps. You will get better. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed 4-step. I'm practicing the disciplines of 10, 11. They're having me work with others. You with me? I'm not leading workshops. They're working with others. It means that I'm helping them set the meetings up. I'm being of service wherever I can. But all of a sudden, I feel a part of AA. I'm not sitting on the sideline monitoring this. I'm a part. I don't know. I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck in North Texas, and it dawns on me that I'm surrounded by liquor. I'm surrounded by drugs. It's Friday. I got some money in my pocket, and I don't want to drink. And I don't want a drug. You see how I said that? I don't want a drink. I don't want a drug. Oh, please, God. I don't want to use. Rubbish. The obsession to use had been removed. The 10th step promises had already started to come about. 7 years in AA, I never once had any period of time where I didn't want to use. You with me? I had periods where I didn't use, but I always wanted to use. And now I'm taken to a spot where I don't want to. That's what a recovered alcoholic looks like. And we need to paint that picture for more people, folks. I had sat on the tailgate and cried like a girl. The relief of this amazing event. I went back up to the house and cranked up some hot jazz and some good rock and roll and washed the dishes and fed the ferrets and planned my future. It was a pretty cool deal without all that crap holding me down on the back. And I've been in AA ever since. And I got good sponsorship and I've been kicking my butt ever. Why didn't I do it before? I don't know. But I'm telling you this, folks, real quick, and I'm going to wrap this down. I was talking to somebody today. The quote was, I don't feel a part of AA. And I know there's some people in here that don't feel a part of this. There's a reason for that. It's not my fault. The reason is, because you're not a part of AA. Not trying to be offensive. You're a member, welcome, but you don't feel like you're a part because you're not doing the same thing we're doing. Make sense? Some of you guys are cyclists. I'll tell this real quick. Go. If you're a cyclist of any kind, eventually you do a century. You'd ride 100 miles. It's just a kind of a rite of passage. It's like losing your virginity, which I almost never did, but that's another story. I couldn't get laid with 2 pockets of cocaine. But y'all are clapping. It's really sad for me, I got to tell you. Oh, my gosh. But I'm riding bikes, and I was semi-competitive for a long period of time, and it was a good deal, but I'd never done a century. So a bunch of the guys got together. There was like 25, 27 of us. We set out one Saturday morning. We're going to ride a slow 100. You with us? When the guys say they're going to ride a slow 100, that means they're going to hammerhead like a sumbitch. So just get ready. But we're going to go slow. It was okay. We knew some cold weather was coming. So we got our cold weather gear. We filled up with lots of stuff to eat, and we headed out. 27 of us, we headed out on a circuit that was going to bring us back to where we started 100 miles later. You with us? Then I can mark that off my list of things to do. Anyway, we got out there and this cold front hit Texas, West Texas kind of a deal. You know, comes through, and it's like, and it is a lot colder than they said it was. We all put on cold weather gear and we started out. Some of the people left right then and there. They turned around. We were only about 20 miles away from town. They said, we're going to turn around. This is going to be a bloodbath today. And so we kept on because it was no big deal. I'm a little skinny guy and they're pulling me and, you know, come on, we can do this. Yay. Shit, we got out about 70 miles and I'm dying. Everybody's food's gone. You with us? It's sleeting out there and people, it's just not fun. We pulled into a little store and we all had to make a decision. And there was a bunch of us still left, but we had to make a decision. We're either going to go on the 20 miles to the house, complete the century, or we're going to get somebody to come pick us up. And six of us said we're going to go on. And the only reason that I didn't get somebody to pick me up is I had nobody to come pick me up. You with us? As I did not want to do this. But we headed out, and it was already dark. It was like this. It was dusk. It was coming down. It was already dark. And everybody kind of jumped into the spot where they were supposed to be. Listen up. The really strong riders, you know, like when you're riding in a Peloton, you switch spots like the goose. You know, you pull for a little while, and you drop to the back, and somebody else pulls, and you drop to the back, and then nobody gets tired. And we had some hammerheads from hell out there, some young kids that were and they pulled the whole way. They said, Chris, don't worry about taking a spot here. Just get behind us and try to stay on the bike. You follow? Because it's slick out there, guys. Every time we'd hit a cattle guard, the bikes would start falling. One guy had a light on the back of his bike. It was a triathlon. He trained at night a lot. He had a bike. He got in the back with us so that the cars could see us because they couldn't see us. None of us intended to be riding at night. We just didn't know what this was going to take. This death march was going to take as long as it took. And we're riding on in there, guys, and I'm going to tell you something, guys. Not more than once in that 20 miles, I felt a hand on my skinny little butt pushing, helping. Everybody was doing what they could do to make sure the entire group of us, six or seven of us, got back to that deal. And I'll never forget that night. Colder than hell, sleeting outside, and we pulled into that parking lot, and I looked down at my little odometer, and it clicked over 100. And we all... Why do I want to cry? Because I rode 100 miles? Big deal. Anybody can do that. I want to cry because we all got off our bikes and put them back on the cars, and we all went in the little sports center, and we got in the little sauna deal, and we took a shower. You with us? Not a word was said, because we all knew that we had done something that we hadn't set out to do, that we'd done something that 20 other people had dropped out and had not done. There's pockets of us all over the world who are doing the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, that are sponsoring all the people, that are doing all the workshops, that are making the coffee, setting the chairs up. And the vast majority of our fellowship are sitting on the sidelines doing absolutely nothing. And then taking shots at those of us that are. You don't feel a part of this? Come help us. Get in the freaking trench with us. Help us dig this hole, because that's how this works. I'm going to tell you guys, we're going to hit it so hard tomorrow when we start talking about 12-step stuff. This is the gravy, this idea of working with others. This is the pinnacle of why we get sober, so that we can turn around and help somebody else. I'm going to say it and move. I look at people like Arner, you know, it started these radio stations years ago when everybody taking shots. You kids are too young, you punks. We were here when they were doing it, taking shots. We did it down at the book depository deal down there, that little place where we did that first little deal. And the old geezer sitting back up there in the goddamn Milano Club taking shots at all the kids in there. What was that about? How many people? How many people's lives have been changed because of XA speakers? Get thousands of emails from people out there on the seas and on oil rigs and people that loners out there that pick this up. People that couldn't buy a $10 CD, all of a sudden now they can download bunches of good men and women. How many of you have I stayed in touch with and watched you sponsor people and carry big books and be responsible in the meeting? When it started to turn to shit, you spoke up and said, excuse me, why don't we turn this meeting back around and start talking about God and the steps again? Why don't we talk about solution instead of the problem? And then you took shots for that because you're doing what the legacies have asked us to do. I got to tell you, about 3 weeks ago, I'm up in Montana doing a workshop, and there's a girl, Friday night speaker, speaking, and Patty, my wife, calls me on the phone, and she says, Mark's in the hospital. It's my sponsor, Mark Houston. And pussy. As both eyes are crying on this one. And I hung up the phone so we could hear the Friday night speaker. When I turned the phone back on, he'd passed away. This is 17 years he'd been my sponsor. Out there taking flack, sharing from the podium about God and the steps. No candy coating with Mark. You always knew where he stood. He had that laugh. And he'd tell you exactly how the cow ate the cabbage. This is about love. This is about God. This is about service. And I wanted to come home so bad. I just was going to pack and come back. And I could hear him sitting on the corner with that laugh. He was saying, no, stay there. Just do what you're supposed to do. That's what we all do. We just do what we're supposed to do. It's not convenient to come to a meeting. You come anyway. It's not convenient to do the fifth step with that cat, but we do it anyway. Because that's what we're about. We're a spiritual program of action. We're a service organization. We help drunks. We don't sit in the meetings and just talk about our day. We're here to be of service. And he was so crystal clear about that with me and his teachings with me. I'm so honored. I'm so honored that I get a chance to continue to do this. For every one of you that has stood in that trench over the years with me and have allowed me to be your friend, and you've been my friend and sent emails and been supportive, thank you so much. For every one of you old crusty bastards carrying big books and taking the heat from the people that should know better and don't, thank you for sticking. I've said it every time I've shared for the last 20 years. For every one of you women that have stayed in this fellowship and continued to work with other women, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that. Still, that's the number one email I get around the country is women looking for women to do the work with. There are a lot of women sober in AA. They just can't tell you how to finish a four-step. And that's a crying shame. And you, so many of y'all in this room, I know because I've watched you, stood in that trench and continue to do this. Guys, it's not going to be easy. If you're on a spiritual path talking about the spiritual solution, you're going to take all kinds of shots. But the gift is that we not only get to stay sober one day at a time, we get all the blessings that come with it. It's called a fulfilled life. And that's, as far as I know, what this is all about. I'm sure honored that you guys let me come speak. Y'all come tomorrow if you can, because we got a bunch of stuff coming, and we got some great speaker tomorrow night, and I think Samantha's talking Sunday morning. Just kick ass. Thank you so much.